Welcome, everybody. This is BNP Weekly, episode 123. So 123 episodes in, and just it is 19th of April, 2021. And funny enough, we have April as a guest as well. But before we go there, let's actually start with a quick introduction. So BNP Weekly is all about what's happening within Microsoft 365 area within the past week. We cover the latest official articles, blog notes, blog posts, and news, and then some of the community articles as well. And typically, we have a visitor in the show. Yeah, it started really well. Now, my name is
Cesar. You've done this like 123 times, right?
Yeah, exactly. My name is Cesar. I'm a program manager in the Microsoft 365 platform engineering side of the house. And with me as a co-host is Waldek. Waldek, who are
you? Good day, everybody, from the sunny Netherlands. My name is Waldek Mazdekas. I am cloud developer advocate for Microsoft 365. And today with us, as Vesa has said already three times, we have a guest. Fellow cloud advocate, April Dunham. Welcome, April.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Thanks for joining us. So April, can you kind of briefly clarify who are you, what do you do, and what does the cloud advocate term mean?
Yeah, so as Waldek said, I'm a cloud advocate focused on Power Platform. So working for Donna Sarkar, been in this role almost 2 months now. So really kind of, you know, we're an extension of Microsoft focused on helping, you know, with the developer story, getting developer feedback so we can give it back to the product team, helping to, you know, create documentation, speak at events, you know, just get the story and the message out and content so that people can, you know, be successful, in my case, in the Power Platform.
I have to say that my reaction is kind of wow, because I always thought that you're actually being in that role for a longer period of time. So what did you do before you joined on that role?
So before this role, I was actually in our partner organization at Microsoft as a partner technical architect. So working, again, kind of focused on Teams development and Power Platform. So really trying to push that story there from our partner ecosystem, getting more partners, building Power Platform practices and developing in Power Platform and Teams.
And then before that, you were an MVP and you were still active as well. So
I was MVP before that. I did my own consulting company for about 8 years in the MVP circle and involved in Power Platform.
Yeah. So you've been around and you've been actually quite visible within the past years, which is really good. We certainly need more women and get more diversity in the community and helping women to understand that it's a safe place to actually join and study and be part of the IT community as well, for sure.
So. Yeah, definitely. It's something I'm really passionate about. You know, just my career journey, when I was first starting out, there wasn't a lot of, you know, women doing this, you know, or at least especially in my local circle. I was really hesitant to ever, you know, speak and get involved in the community because it was all guys. It wasn't until my first SharePoint conference that I went to in 2008, probably, where I saw people like the Kathy Dews and the Laura Rogers, and like other women actually up there speaking. And that was kind of the catalyst to make me think, well, I can do this too. So I think it's really something that we need more women out there visible doing this. Yeah.
Absolutely. And you mentioned actually, like I said, Kathy Dew, Laura Rogers has been around and both are now, well, doing slightly different things, but they used to be an MVP as well. Laura is an MVP still, but more focusing on the Power Platform. And then Kathy is now in Microsoft, actually in engineering, in my sibling team, doing responsible of branding capabilities, which is really cool because she used to be talking about the branding capabilities. Now, it's actually really cool to see more and more MVPs. First of all, in general, getting MVPs to the Microsoft and then helping explaining the road of joining and explaining for Microsoft also how things should be done, because then you have the experience when you work externally as an MVP with the community and all of that stuff. So it's not just a student graduate from a university without any previous experience.
Yeah, definitely.
Now, Waldek, I'm speaking and questioning here. Just feel free to jump in, of course. But can you actually, April, talk about slightly your career? You mentioned that you started like 8 years ago or 2008 with SharePoint the first thing with the community and all of that stuff. But how did you end up being an MVP?
Yeah, so that actually, you know, that took a while. That was like a long journey for me. So, you know, fast forwarding back, like how I even got started with SharePoint actually was in an internship. So I was interning at a local native casino here, and I was trying to rotate each of the departments and figure out what exactly I wanted to do, because I knew I wanted to do IT. I didn't know exactly what. Got with the development department, and they happened to be in the middle of a big upgrade for SharePoint to 2007 from 2003. And that's where they needed the help. So I was given a head first in the C# book and a SharePoint 2007 development book and said, you know, teach yourself this and help us with that. So kind of stuck. And I realized I really liked that. And that set me on my career path there, and you know, worked at a telecom company for a while. And you know, when I graduated, it was 2008, and here in the States, we kind of had this big economic collapse at the time. So it wasn't a good time to be graduating and trying to get a job and what you actually wanted to do. So I had to take kind of a data entry job at the telecom company. But fortunately, they had SharePoint there. So I kind of wormed my way into helping people. I would say, like, man, this isn't working right. And I would just, you know, offer my help with different things. Like, well, here's how you upload multiple documents or whatever it might be, you know, and worming my way into helping with some InfoPath stuff in SharePoint Designer. And eventually, I got a SharePoint dev job there. Did that for a few years and then started my own consulting company. It was probably about, 5 years into that when I got my MVP in Power Platform, because I really kind of shifted, of course, like a lot of people did, like you mentioned, Laura Rogers did, focusing a lot on the Power Platform story and SharePoint and, you know, helping our clients, you know, build business processes and solutions with it. So got really heavy into that and eventually got the MVP.
Yeah, it's amazing to actually see how many, everybody has a background on SharePoint who's been around for like 15 years. And then through the SharePoint community pipeline, then we kind of sprinkle around across the different projects and teams and organizations and products, which is really, really good, like it should be, because there's so much more than just the SharePoint right now available. So, but back in the time, that was where it all started. That was where we had the absolutely the most welcoming community and the most active community, probably even, well, it's crazy to say even in the whole tech industry, but who knows, because I haven't been around that much, but people are saying that. So
yeah definitely. I don't think if I wouldn't have got that internship and got involved in SharePoint, I honestly don't believe I'd be where I was today. I've kind of set up my whole career path.
Absolutely. Now, coming back on the, sorry, Val.
Let me raise my hand in here.
There you go.
So, April, you mentioned that you went from, I wouldn't call it support person, right? Because like you help people with using SharePoint, uploading files and doing things, basically using things that are available out of the box, to being a dev. Right. And then you switch more into using Power Platform. So how do you experience that from being non-developer to now calling yourself dev and then going to Power Platform, which is considered, I don't know, like pro devs, people who live in code. It's like, no, this isn't dev. Right. But it's like the borders that we see blur. So how do you experience that shift from helping folks use products to being developer and now being an advocate for it?
Yeah, I mean, so that's interesting, because I think that's where I can shed some light on that, because I've experienced both sides, from, you know, going from not dev to dev to back to maybe focusing on more non-traditional dev tools. I think that the lines, like you said, are really blurred here. And that's one of the things why I was really excited to get this role, because I want to share and show that the Power Platform can be for everyone, right? It really is. It can be a low to no code solution where you don't have to know a traditional programming language. But if you do, if you know C# or Angular, you can extend it even more. You can take it even farther. There's a, you know, story for everyone, no matter where you're coming from, to build solutions in the Power Platform. And that's something that I'm really passionate about letting everyone know, because I don't think a lot of people realize that.
Yeah. And I think that's a great tooling for enabling people to start with a not that much previous knowledge, but then there's a lot of opportunities to grow within that tool and the product as well. So kind of then growing to be a low-code developer and then potentially a pro developer, because I think the Power Platform is claiming the pro developer side as well, or getting there because of the code behinds and the definitions of everything in YAML. And
well, you know, and for me, the thing that's cool, sorry to interrupt, but look,
No, it's okay.
Is, you know, you can kind of focus if you're building a Power Platform solution on what you like. Like if you hate building front ends, but you love APIs, well, you can have a citizen developer, whatever you want to call it, build the front end of your app and Power Apps, and you can focus on the API layer and creating the connector. So,
yeah.
Yeah, and I guess also maybe at some point we will get to the point where we'll say, you know what, let's drop the labels and let's just call ourselves folks who build things.
Yeah.
Builders.
Exactly. Extend or building. Yeah. Like, what does it matter if you're a pro dev, a little bit dev, citizen dev? Like, no, we build things. Some
I think
things
that's
are advanced, some things are less advanced.
Yeah, so and I think that's really key point on the, on being truly inclusive on the community side. It's not kind of a label people because of their whatever they do or what they are or where they come from, rather than just everybody is welcome, like it should be.
But I guess even to us, right? I mean, like we imagine that you would talk to a person who builds web parts in TypeScript. If that person would talk to a person who builds compilers or who builds 3D modeling or builds game engine, like that person, like, you're not like you're building web parts, like you're drawing squares, like you're not like, so it's all a matter of perspective, right?
Yeah. Sure, absolutely. Absolutely.
And I agree. I want to see those labels dropped, and it's hard because you hear like one we hear a lot is professional developers to describe people that, you know, write with C# or traditional code. That one gets me a lot because I've seen it offend, you know, people like, well, you say I'm not professional because I don't, you know, C# and I'm just building a power app. You know, I would love to see those labels kind of. And we're just people that make things, like you said, or whatever one we'll call it, makers, you know, just developers in general. Yeah.
And when you think about it, isn't it all about how to achieve the end result and the solve the business problem rather than what tooling did you use to actually solve it? So
exactly.
Because there's absolutely a lot of opportunities on the Power Platform side, and of course not on the code side and development side as well. Not taking anything away from the development side as well. I think there's a spectrum of different roles and skill sets in the Microsoft 365 platform. But how do you actually, which is an interesting topic. So now that we have a TypeScript specialist cloud advocate on this call, and then we have this kind of a you come from a Power Platform side of the things, which also have the lower low code.
Me.
Yeah, low code.
Who is TypeScript guy here? You April TypeScript?
How do we position the Microsoft 365 developer journey for a external and new people? How would you characterize, or how would we? What would be the right way of explaining what is the Microsoft 365 opportunity? Or is it everything? Because that's always a really hard thing to explain as well.
That's really hard because there are so many, like, you know, take the TypeScript analogy from a Power Platform perspective. If you know TypeScript, you can build Power Apps component framework controls to extend the, you know, widgets or components that we can use within a Power App. So there's something you can do right there. I mean, we could be talking about, you know, SharePoint web parts. I mean, there's so many different areas that you could go in if you know that. If you know C# and Azure Functions, we can extend Power Platform in that way and workflows and processes to do short little serverless type functions like that. There's really so many different ways. And or if you are an Excel guru, right? I mean, we can do list formatting to transform your list. We can build a Power App easily. It's really, you can make your own path, you know, based off of where you're starting at.
Yeah, I think one of the problems for sure is that every single product is releasing so many new things all the time that then as an external developer or an end user or a product owner might be overwhelmed with all of the incoming things. The classic discussion point, what would be, how can people deal with that change? What would be the easiest way of dealing that?
Easiest.
I mean, I think the person that solves that is going to be rich, right? I mean,
that is true. Yes.
I think, you know, the MVPs and the community help with that. I mean, you're surfacing up all the latest stuff, the really important stuff that you need to know. I mean, heck, even this call right here, you're highlighting like the top things and blog posts of the week so you can get kind of a short synopsis of what you missed and what you need to know and what's changing. The community calls are really great for that, you know, whether it's the PNP, the Power Apps community calls, so you can see what's going on in that landscape. I mean, that's, you know, things that I used when I was an MVP and I still currently use to kind of keep in the loop there is, you know, I think if you're plugged into the community, you'll know what's happening and what's changing and what's going on.
Yeah, that's a good way of defining also value of the community and then having those additional discussion points and connections. And then one thing absolutely which works in the community as well is the mentoring and helping. So So everybody is pretty much open always for helping, obviously depending on the availability of time. So the personal messages, every now and then I get overwhelmed of people sending individual one-to-one questions. But then at the same time, if it's not just a random technical question, if it's somebody asking help on how on their career or how could they get more connected, I think that's something where everybody is super passionate, immediately helping on things. Coming back, actually, April, coming back on your discussion related on being a woman on technology and IT design, what would be your kind of a, we're putting you on a spot without any pre-warning, what would be your tips on moving and coming to the IT business as a woman? Are there any learnings from your career?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's probably changed, you know, since when I was kind of starting out, you know, being the only woman in my IT classes and then in my, you know, jobs for a while there. I would say you don't let the possible uncomfortableness of, you know, maybe being the only woman in there stop you from getting into IT. I mean, if you have, we all have something that we can share. From that, you know, and don't be kind of find what you're comfortable with. Like for me, I wasn't comfortable speaking right off the bat. So I started off blogging. There's so many different ways that you can get plugged into the community and get started with IT. So find what you're comfortable with, whether it's writing, doing pre-recorded videos, speaking, doing one-on-one conversations. And then, you know, again, I same community a lot, but I think that's key. And that was key for me is when I went to the SharePoint conference and I met some of these people, some of them did mentor me. And I think finding a good mentor in IT, especially as a woman, is really key to succeeding and, you know, helping you when things are going to come up, you know, and things that are unique to women, like you know, bullying, harassment, different things that we have to deal with, unfortunately. And having a woman advocate or a mentor on your side is really going to help you deal with those things that come up.
Yeah.
I think that there's a great point, because the one thing that I see, especially in community, is that it spans beyond your company. Like you might be working in a company of 20 folks, maybe where the IT department consists of 3 people, right? So they might be not that many folks who could be a mentor to you in your field. But in a community that spans beyond your company, you might be more likely to find somebody who will guide you and who has maybe some more experience to share. And heck, maybe that person will say, you know what? Maybe the person, like, you know what you know, but did you know that there's a bigger world outside, and maybe it is a time for you to change or think about other things to do? You know, and these are things that you wouldn't hear internally only if you would stay within your company, right? Because like how?
Yeah, you really hit the nail on the head there. I mean, and I think that's typical with what happens with all of us. I mean, you're in your own little narrow world. I mean, same thing happened with me. You don't know what you don't know, what's possible, what's out there until you expand that out a bit. And so many things can open up for you when you do.
And one thing what I kind of obviously following up on super close to what happens with the community for the past decade or 15 years or whatever, is that it's really great to see that anybody in the across the world can actually get involved, get an MVP status by being consistently providing value and understanding understanding that consistency is really the key of additional things here and there, blogging, it could be podcasting, it could be videos, whatever, but keep on doing that for a certain moment, and then you'll get the MVP status, then you get more connected, then you get an NDA status, which means that we from a Microsoft side can more openly talk about what's coming, and then you get more visibility and get prepared on that stuff. And there's a lot of kind of opportunities then to do networking and connectivity and connections across the world. And it's great actually to see the fact that it's not really country specific anymore as such. Anybody across the world can do this just by starting contributing a GitHub or whatever is the preference. So,
yep.
And I think we need to be even more vocal on that one in the future, because I think that's a huge, huge, huge thing, especially now that everybody at least is still working remotely. I think it starts looking pretty okay from US side. I think I just saw it 50% in US adults have been now vaccinated, but Europe is way behind of that one. So.
I'm hoping, you know, it's pretty good here. Most everyone I know is, you know, getting the vaccine. So I'm hoping at some point go back to normal here.
Yeah.
But it is also an interesting point you mentioned, Vesa, about like how, helping people or encouraging folks or making them aware even that they can do open source. Yes, but on the other hand, open source is not for everybody, and there are employers who prohibit it, right? So it's not, while it could be, or it is a way to do it, right? And luckily there are more ways. Like, for one, start being present on community calls. Like, if like that is just like the low-hanging fruit, right? Just say hi. It's like, hey, I'm here, I'm building stuff too. Yep. I cannot do X, but I can do Y, right? So like there are many ways that range very much from presenting on community call to writing a sample to writing a book to showing up at an event or user group, right? Yeah. So there is something for everybody. And I think it's just the key is like find your niche, and maybe we need to do a better job trying to like map journey from somebody who would just start and who would basically say hi, like I'm building stuff on 365, where can I start, to somebody who is repeatedly helping others too.
Yeah, absolutely. And then at the same time, it's not like everybody is even expected to get an MVP status. It's completely fine being part of the community just by dropping into the community calls and then having waving hands on the together mode pictures, which seems to be pretty popular every single time nowadays when you set it on. There's just 50 taken. So hopefully we'll get more bigger together mode pictures taken pretty soon in Teams. So we'll see. But it's one way belonging to a group of people outside of the normal bubble, which is actually really cool. So I'm a good example, even personally, because, hey, I live in Finland, in Helsinki, not in engineering in Redmond.
Are you trying to say there are no other people around you?
I don't see that many people. So. But anyway. Sorry, yeah. April, you're about to say.
I was just going to say, you know, that's key. I love where you're going with that. I mean, it really just starts with being present. I mean, and being present can just be enough if you're, you know, learning and getting on the community calls, and that could expand from there. You meet people, you get involved in other projects with them. So be present and the rest will come.
Yeah, absolutely. And be patient because...
Yes.
Quite often you see people doing great job, and then they stop, and then you have to go and ask a question. What you were doing, such an awesome job. No, but nobody was following up. Nobody was following up on what I'm doing. No, there was a lot of people. So let's don't.
But that is also an interesting point, right? I think that people who, let's say, made it, I think maybe we, if I can say that I am one of these folks, like being an MVP for 12 years and now being here at Microsoft, like I have a lot of luck with that. But on the other hand, like we never really talked like what we went through. And like when I had a blog, like when I would start, I would start blog with together with three others guys or two other guys, because like we were worried, like what if we have nothing to say? And there would be like crickets for 2 months. So we will start one blog with three of us so that there's three of us. Turned out like one person didn't write anything. The other guy would write a single blog. I'm still here, you know? Yeah. So. But it only proves the point, right? And you start with like your writing, and back in the days, like community wasn't really that much of a thing. So like you would write to two people, and then the next month there is 10. Yeah, exactly. And then like there's, and that becomes a 50. But it takes time. Like we all see these, you know, overnight successes who like rocket ship, like going on like, no, because even these people like worked for 10 years and nobody knew about them. Sure. Right. So maybe there's also something for us to say that we need to be more open about our careers and advancements that we have went through and where we are now.
Yeah, I agree. I think everyone needs to tell their story and realize that it's like, because that's the way it seemed for me. It's like, man, these people that I idolized back then, they just like were instant successes. They did this forever and it was taking me years and years. I mean, what, 10 plus years before I ever, in my career, before I got an MVP, you know, and I was blogging, speaking, doing all this. It can take a while, and it doesn't matter if it takes a while. It's everyone has their own unique journey. I think that's probably the most common way. It's taking quite a while to get there too. It's not, you know, usually instant success like you may imagine.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Now let's actually jump on the articles at this point, so we have enough time on the commercial discussion break. After that as well. Commercial break. So let me share my screen. So let's see how fast it works. Oh, that was fast today. So you never know what's built. No, it's amazingly. It was super responsive. Wow. Anyway, some Microsoft article news from the Microsoft Teams blog. Streamline requests with the new approval features. Clearly, that my accident with the rollerblading is impacting my way of speaking as well. So we can talk about that one after the articles. But anyway, so streamline requests with new approval. I need to speed up. Features in Microsoft Teams. New functionality. New functionalities on the approvals and automation and good stuff. A lot of videos and good clarification on how things are working from that side. So really, really, and good to see the excitement actually on the comments as well. So good news on that. New frontline worker enhancements in Teams to communicate to digitalize processes and stay secure. So basically, that's actually pretty cool. So we're adding additional device support, even with a kind of a, well, more integrated experiences in Teams with the cameras and everything else. And that's actually makes a lot of sense. And then having a mobile phone as the primary way of communicating.
As well. The only thing I want to ask you, like next time you skate, please do not do that because you're not, you're not paying enough attention already. And with this device on your head, like you will miss like every tree, every corner.
Yes, indeed. Good. This one is from Stephen Rose, related on your questions from Microsoft Ignite Ask the Expert sessions about Microsoft Teams answers. So this is basically just a summary on the Spring Ignite. So there was a lot of Q&A questions which were not necessarily answered during the thing. And so we basically covered all of the questions
lot,
which were pending.
It? It's really
That's
cool.
That's a lot of questions. And this is really good that we're following up on things openly and answering all of the questions which we didn't cover. So. Really good. Now, from SharePoint side of the house, this is actually a post put down by me, announcing public preview on SharePoint Framework 1.12.1. So we had some regressions in SharePoint Framework 1.12, so we pulled it, basically canceled the release, and then 1.12.1 is now for a public preview. So it's not yet GA, so not yet for the production usage, but this is basically intended to have a more improved quality assurance process. We did a significant level of testing before this already internally, but now getting it also externally available. And then within at this moment, I think it's rather days, within days, we'll get the 1.12 out now that we are addressing all of the question, all of the issues which are known, which is good. And then we're using the similar process for 1.13 and 14 and 15 and all of that. So. Good. Migrate messages from other chat platforms to Microsoft Teams with Microsoft Graph APIs. Really good improvements in the Graph APIs to be able to do that. And the super, super important thing inputting this one, so you can do back in time timestamps. So old discussions get migrated to the Teams as an old thing. Maybe one point, if even though we're Microsoft employees in this call, it would be nice if Teams would be slightly better on going back in time to read those old messages as well. Because at least personally, I have a massive challenge where my team is in Richmond and every single morning when I start working, I've got to go and read the discussion. And the discussion gets really long and it's surprisingly.
Like, we all need a TLDR bot. Like, summarize for me all unread messages in this thread or in this chat. That'll be perfect.
I think actually Cortana has something like that because in the daily emails it says you promise to do the following things. I don't know if that's only internal or external.
I think that is. Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, but I mean, imagine that you ask the bot to do it and it comes back with you haven't missed anything and you're like, that was easy.
True. But can you trust it? No, anyway. Enhance app engagement with Microsoft Teams Activity Feed API. So good to see improvements over there as well. So new API improvements always needed more and more to the Graph. Microsoft Graph Mailback, copy move files and folders in SharePoint Online. So that's a really good common scenario when I move files between folders and basically just walking through the different API endpoints, how to make that happen. So really cool as well. Build quality Microsoft Teams app with these best practices, part two. So there was a part one a few weeks back, or was it a week ago? And then this is apparently this three-part series, but really good kind of a summary on what's possible and basically what are these functionalities intended to be used. So really, really cool stuff. And something like if you want to build something like this one, obviously use Teams UI Toolkit, because that gives you the design, which you can use with a toolbar and then the the wizard things and all of that stuff. So really cool stuff as well. Now, what else? This one, April, came from your side, announcing data source environment variables. Do you want to quickly do an intro on what this is all about?
Yeah, so environment variables, for those who aren't Power Apps people, are kind of like a config file for your Power Apps. So the new features is we didn't have these environment variables, if I could talk, before for Canvas apps and the flows within the Canvas apps, but now we do. So now we can dynamically choose the data source when we're moving our Canvas apps and the flows behind them between different environments and different tenants, which is pretty huge from an ALM standpoint.
So basically, you have a separate dev environment, QA environment, and then production environment, and this enables you then the options of transitioning now that the information is being exposed. In previously, that wasn't exposed. And that was always the challenge, kind of, you needed to do the creation of application directly in the tenant where it's intended to be used. So now we're getting in a more professional ALM process. Whatever it's SD, what does it, software development lifecycle process?
Lifecycle.
SDLC.
Yes, yes, exactly. Boom. There we go. Use Power Automate to automatically create SharePoint news links from a RSS feed. That's pretty cool. Blog post from Will Holland, Treewill is his company. So basically walking through that process and added as a blog post. So really, really cool stuff for automating things and a lot of tricks on the Power Automate side. So April, I'm going to put you on a spot on the Power Automate side. Some of this stuff gets so complicated. So how do you actually learn to do some of the things? Or is it just by testing and trying?
It's testing. So, you know, Power Automate has its own expression language, you know, kind of based off of logic apps. Now, I will say, though, this eventually is going to get easier because I don't know if you all saw the announcement about PowerFX, but we're trying to create a unified programming language, quote unquote, for the Power Platform, which will span across Power Apps, Power Automate, and everything. So, you know, right now to do an expression to like format a date and time, it's different in Power Apps versus what it is in Power Automate. So that story is going to get better over time. They're going to have a unified language. But yes, as of right now, you have to learn its own unique expression language that, as you're seeing in that blog post, to do things. Yeah. It's really trial by error.
But then again, it's the same with, for example, Microsoft Lists and the JSON formatting stuff, which I know Chris Kent is the only one who can just, I'll just do something like this. And then, but everybody else is like, how would he know?
He spends hours and hours figuring it out.
Well, that's true. That is actually that's the right result or answer. Now, they will say the build apps for Microsoft Build a Learn Together event was last week, and Louis Fries drew a really nice drawings related on summaries related on that one. So basically, kind of a summary on what was actually presented and how things work. And these are really cool visual presentations. Some people prefer kind of a visual way of learning. Some people learn the reading way of learning. So that's why we do videos and written stuff and then drawing stuff. So.
And also, another thing, like it is a great like quick overview, because like if you watch a video, well, you need to watch the whole thing because there is no easy way to search in it. If you read a blog post, you need to read the whole thing or skim the heading. Whereas here, you have a single picture and you can quickly get the overview of it. And then you're like, hey, I am interested in that part. And it will be kind of three-fourths in. You know, so then you can look it back either on video or in the article. So these are really great to quickly get a glance of it, plus memorizing it, right? As you said, like some folks are visually inclined. And that is for them the perfect way to associate things and keep them in mind.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Cool. Then we had from Sam Collins, FAQ in Document Core. So how to build a SPFX solution, which is basically creating a nice looking custom SPFX web part, which is then having this kind of FAQ look and feel. And then you can basically get an answers on things and really cool stuff as well. I know that she's a relatively new in the community, but being really active on starting to be more and more active, which is really good. More people, more the merrier. And it's a great way of either using blogs or videos or whatever is your preference. So. And by the way, on the Microsoft 365 BMP blog, we absolutely welcome everybody to blog there as well. So Louis Fries is the contact on that one. So, And then Louis Fries created or had a Microsoft 365 PMP community spotlight on Mikael Svensson. Another example of an MVP moving into Microsoft and now being a principal program manager in the Microsoft Search area. So, but what's cool about Mikael as well, he's still spending time on source code, writing code in GitHub and helping people and being active in the community, which is like it should be. So we didn't lose him. There was a fear that we'll lose him. No. then this one, AI Builder April 2021, I played. So April, this is update from you, not that joke. But so basically improved data table extraction from form processing. So this is related kind of like the SharePoint Syntex is using these kind of things behind of the scene as well. So it's the same automation from Azure, which is doing that. But in this case, we're using it in the Power Platform, so in a Power Automate. But that's actually really cool. So you're able to teach the detection of data. Funny enough, before I worked in Microsoft, it's been a while, I did a invoice automation. So basically, it was all about scanning a invoice and then putting that in electronic format and then approving that and making automation on that.
So in other words, you're trying to say that we haven't learned anything in the 10 or
15 years. But hey.
15 years, there you go.
But it takes a while for the cloud to adapt notices. Anyway. we'll cut that away from the future. Now, Power Apps print function from Laura Rogers. We talked about Laura being a good example of a community member who started really early and then being evolving into new areas. And she's been around for a long, long, long time and helping on everybody else to learn on Power Platform or InfoPath or SharePoint Designer, or it doesn't just matter. There's so many things what she has done in the past, for sure. So. But talking about the print functionality in the Power Automate. And then Mark D. Anderson crawled properties not created from the site columns in modern team sites. So basically just a story on that one. So making sure that people understand how this works and how it can be resolved. So how to make those things happen. And then crawled properties are important for the search engine to detect the relevant data in them. So you're able to do filtering and what are those? What is the
refiner?
Thank you. While like, you're reading my mind. Excellent. Not the first time. No, it's pretty scary.
Thinking.
Yes,
stop
exactly.
I cannot.
Then Peter Venstra had a new blog post related on 8 top reasons to use Dataverse or SharePoint List in Power Platform. This is kind of a classic debate. April, any thoughts, quick thoughts on Dataverse versus SharePoint? Not saying that you need to decide which one is the best, but because I think it depends, right?
It depends. It depends on the scale and your requirements, right? I mean, are you going to want to need to move it between multiple environments like that dev test and probably talked about from an ALM standpoint? If so, it's going to be much easier if you're using Dataverse because it's all baked in to the solutioning mechanism. You don't have to worry about scripting out your SharePoint list deployment to different environments, things like that. So there's lots of variables, and I really love what Peter did here. I've read his blog post, and he kind of explains those different decision points there that you would have, but there's use cases for each. I'm not one of those SharePoint as a data source haters.
Yep.
Up there. There's definitely a place for that.
Yes, let's try to be inclusive. Yes. There is a place. Let's not be declining of the other options. There's always an option. There's always a reason. And why does certain products exist? Well, there's probably a reason for that as well. And he comes to the same conclusion related on what we were chatting, that it all depends, which is a great story for consultants, by the way, because then there's a consulting gig. I'm an ex-consultant as well, so recovering consultant. Securing your Azure functions with an existing Azure AD app. So basically, how do I make sure that when I call an Azure function, there's a application-based authentication security? Is that a right way of saying that? So basically,
in a way.
Basically
your API isn't anonymous, yes.
Exactly. So securely call the API within the business boundaries. That's the right way of doing that from Ilya. And then another one from Ilya, which is using OAuth on behalf of Flow in a Node.js Azure function, and similar kind of a story. And how do I then authenticate on calling that Azure function in a secure way? So that's what this one is all about. Ilya is in a new role in a new company, so he moved switched roles pretty recently and building stuff related on this functionality, these functionalities. So it's good to see that he's sharing still his learnings. A few more. This is from this unknown lady. No, just kidding. So, and what is this all about?
Oh yeah, so just a simple tip and trick for Power Apps, how you can create a drop down where you can filter dates in your, you know, data in your Power Apps based off of like current week, last week, previous week, pay period, month, whatever it might be.
And you quite often actually have a kind of a complimentary video showing exactly the same thing as well.
Yeah, I like to do both. You know, people learn different ways. So walk through in the blog or video.
Yep, absolutely. Cool. Absolutely. And I love the graphics on the thumbnailing. So these are pretty good. So really, really good. Then from Sergey Sergeev, how to use React Hook Form together with Fluent UI React, aka Fluent Office UI Fabric React. Again, the terminology, is it the Fluent UI React or Office UI Fabric React, is complicated. It's basically the same thing. We as a Microsoft mix that term a lot. But if you're using React Hooks, how do you do validation of forms in the SPFX? So this comes really kind of deep dives on the SPFX development practices and helps on implementing those scenarios. So how you would validate this kind of thing as an example. Using the latest Microsoft Graph client in SPFX from Sebastian Levert, another ex-MVP, which is, there's a lot of ex-MVPs who moved into Microsoft recently within the past like 5 years. But good story related on how to use that, how to use the latest one, and what are the options. And then obviously using MTT, the Microsoft Graph Toolkit, where possible, the MTT SharePoint provider, that's still in preview, isn't it? I think it's getting
out. MTT SPFX. These are two different things.
Yes, they are. You are absolutely correct on that. Which you, by the way, contributed on that one. So.
Yes.
Open source works. Yes. managing concurrent tenant-wide and site collection scope SharePoint framework deployment. So that's a good story on that one by Danny Chessy. So explaining the differences, how we're deploying and what's being activated and what's being executed, bit depending on where it's being activated and where it's being hosted in the SharePoint side. And I think actually we've been having some issues related on this one. So there has been some changes related on how this actually behaves, and we need to have a look on that one internally. And then the last one is SPFX or React localization and is an alternative. So basically, how do I localize my solutions from is it from Tron?
Delaware, I don't know. So
I
it is a company Peter. Blog.
Yeah, it's a company. Ah, that's true. It is a company blog.
Who is the author? Who is the author? If you scroll all the way down.
No, there is no author. No, there's no author. The blog post just
materialized. If we scroll a little bit down on the right-hand side, authors. Oh no, it's all of them. Okay.
It's all of them. I think it was actually Robin who had tweeted this one. But anyway, it doesn't matter. How to do React localization and easy alternative for SPFX. So good blog post on that one. And now, since we're running out of time, I'm going to stop presentation and let's do a quick round of a discussion. What's going to happen this week? Anything interesting? Waldeck, we're going to put you on the spot first as an example. In the last week, you had the Graph event.
You wanted to make really fast, right? So
We have 2 minutes, 3 minutes.
So. Yeah, exactly. And for three of us, right? So we shipped a new version of CLI where we support creating AAD apps from the manifest, which is a great addition for folks. So if you need to create AAD apps across different environments, you can now grab the manifest from the portal and use that to create your app in different directory, which is really great. We're working on new improvements for CLI. We've updated also the ability to upgrade projects to SPFX 1.1, RCO, and RC1. When you will ship the new SPFX version, we will update CLI as well. Other than that, last week, our team had an event about Graph. So there was also a great online event together with watch parties. to basically explain what Graph is, how it works, and how can you start. So the videos are already available for on-demand man watching. And this week, we have a combination of planning for this quarter along with new modules for Learn. So stay tuned.
Excellent. April, what's on your side?
So, my main thing Wednesday, the PowerApps community call, myself, Hugo Bernier, Gifa, Matthew, and Hero, and Anton will be talking about our new PNP repo for PowerFX samples and custom function samples. So we'll be talking about what that means, how you can contribute and all that. So definitely check that out.
That's a good point. And we need to spend 10 seconds on that one. So we're expanding there's multiple sample galleries already which we are hosting in multiple locations, but we want to basically make it easier for people to find Power Platform samples as well. First in its own sample gallery and then moving into this unified Microsoft 365 sample gallery sooner or later. Now, on my side, we're running out of time. I'm not going to go for rollerblading right now because I need to fix my small hits here and there first. Wasn't a bad hit. Yeah, I need to, heal. No broken bones, no broken joints, just some tarmac things. But SPFX 112 potentially out this week, we'll see. Maybe goes next week, and then hosting the team's monthly community call tomorrow and a few other things. So I think we're getting more and more aligned with the community calls as well, which is really, really great. But I think that's it for now. So thank you.
There's one more thing I want to share. Last week, we launched the Microsoft 365 Developer Community Survey.
Yes, good point.
Yes, we would really, really love you and appreciate if you could spend five minute tops of your time to tell us what resources do you use for work, what works, what doesn't, where we can improve. So we got some feedback already. We would love to have more. So one, fill it in by yourself. Two, share with everybody whom you know who builds apps on 365.
Cool. Excellent. Thanks, Paul, for that one. But I think other than that, that's it. Thank you, April, for joining us. Really, time flies so fast when we're having these calls. So unfortunately, it would have been really nice to have you here even longer. We'll get you back on sooner or later.
That's good.
But I think that's it. Thanks everybody for watching and or listening if you're choosing the podcast version, and we'll be back within a week. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Bye.